You know, I was like it on Coast to Coast when there's a mystery that even I don't know the answer to that we'll get to coming up when we get the main guest on next hour. But as of last report, this is what I heard, that Bob Chapman is going to join us to talk about the economy tonight. He said, you know, it's a house of cards. I mean, it may feel like we're heading in the right direction. You might hear the news that says things are heading in the right direction. He knows where all the bodies are buried. He said the causes of this depression are yet to be addressed. It could collapse again. He knows more about that, and he'll tell us coming up next hour. He publishes an international forecaster newsletter, and this is what I heard, that he is out of the country right now in an undisclosed location because there have been attempts on his life. And it's because of the information that he has about Goldman Sachs. I'll suspend my disbelief for the time being until we get Bob Chapman coming up next hour and we find out more about it. Suspension of disbelief. Well, that's always the theme when we talk to Gary Patterson. He's the rock and roll expert on Coast to Coast AM, tracking these pop culture mysteries. And we'll address a couple of things. One goes back to the guest we had a couple of weeks ago on the allegation that Jimi Hendrix was murdered. We'll talk about that. Plus, then he has been following the Michael Jackson story, and he's looking at it from a slightly different angle. Every time I talk to him, he's given me a prediction about what would happen next. So when we talk to Gary Patterson coming up later on this hour, we'll find out. He was the one who said that there would be a claim. He said, just watch. We're just days away from a claim that Michael Jackson was assassinated. Within about 48 hours of him saying it, the story started popping up. This one was claimed by Father Joe Jackson that he believed Michael Jackson was murdered. He's looking into the murder allegations. We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later on this hour and other rock and roll mysteries. And then when we get into the blog, I don't know why. It's like crypto news this evening is. It's like a personal confessional. I can't explain it. I've got some interesting stories. You'll hear about those next. And then I threw in a bunch of other stuff too. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Well, I don't know if you've been following it, and I don't even know that it quite qualifies as crypto news on Coast to Coast AM. But before we get to Gary Patterson, I wanted to pass along something about this whole Michael Phelps case and the controversy over his suit. I mean, it is a case of some very interesting technology. Michael Phelps, the greatest Olympian of all time, as he is called, credits the suit that he wore during the Olympics and the one he continues to wear now as, you know, being a part of his success and saying that he believes that the suit technology, the kind of fabric that's used for these suits, the kind of seamless technology that all the suits are made completely without any seams whatsoever, so that when you there's no drag on the human body when you're in the water, and that it forces the water to slide differently over the human body than the natural oils or hairs on a human frame. So these suits have become very important to swimmers, and every swimmer has its own deal. So Michael Phelps has been involved in a sort of a suit controversy in that he finally beat Milorad Kavec again, no doubt about it, with a defiant performance in a supposedly inferior suit. Michael Phelps stayed close over the outward lap and rallied on the return to become the first swimmer ever to break 50 seconds in the 100-meter butterfly. So he beat the Serbian with a time of 49.82, just a few tenths of a second, or 1/10 of a second ahead of Milorad Kavec. Now, what's been so interesting about this is that they have been fighting about the suit. Kavec has a different kind of a suit. He has a different suit, but they're all going to be banned. All of these super suits are going to be banned coming up when it goes into effect later on this year. This suit controversy has gotten overhyped a bit, maybe. I mean, it takes away from how good these swimmers really are. But the fabric technology is amazing. In some cases, they say that one of the fabric is almost more buoyant, that you can take a this is what I was told, that you could take, in the case of the suit that Milorad Kopich wore, you can float it in the water and put a brick in it, and the suit will keep the brick from sinking. Now, I kind of want to see that to believe it, but at least that's the legend of the suit. And that's one of the things that I think maybe even psychologically helps the swimmers. My son is a competitive high school swimmer. In fact, he had his best time ever tonight in the 200-meter butterfly. He came in at 2:14 and change, coming in just ahead of like a fraction of a second behind his friend Brian and another kid. And he swears there's a difference in the suits. My son does. As I heard the story, too, the kid who won the race tonight by just a knuckle, right? I mean, they came in like 1, 2, 3. My son was 3, but it came in like really right on top of each other. And the kid that won the race by the knuckle was overheard laughing as he got out of the pool saying, man, that was all the suit. So, what happens, we don't know. Won't matter soon. The high-tech suit controversy will be over when the ban goes into effect later on this year, but it's been fun to watch. Speaking of watching, remember last week when we reported that dark spot on Jupiter? Well, a strange spot emerged on Venus last week, and astronomers are not sure what caused it. They hope future observations will reveal whether volcanic activity or turbulence in the planet's atmosphere or charged particles from the sun are to blame. Amateur astronomer Frank Melillo of Holtsville, New York, first spotted the new feature on Venus, which is brighter than its surroundings at ultraviolet wavelengths on the planet's southern hemisphere. He reported that on July 19th, according to NewScientist.com. Now, so you've had an explosion on Jupiter. You had some sort of scarring on Jupiter, remember? And then you've got this one on Venus. If we get an explosion from Mars, will anybody be reminded of War of the Worlds? Isn't that how War of the Worlds started? Look out, Grover's Mill. Anything is possible. To prove that point, too, that anything is possible, scientists have discovered a new rare bird species with a bald head. Now, this may not sound extraordinary at first, but consider this creature, dubbed the bare-faced bulbul, was found in Laos. It is the only known bald songbird in mainland Asia. And it's just been discovered for the first time in 100 years. It's a new species. It's been there the whole time, but we finally just saw one. So I think this speaks to all of the cryptozoological stories we've had on the air. Up until now, you could say it's never existed. Now we've discovered it. Now we know it's been there all along. How many other stories will that apply to? This bare-faced bulbul lives in sparse trees and in the sun-bleached limestone of the Laos lowlands. The researchers describe the bird's call as a series of whistled, dry, bubbling tones. And the official name for this is the Piconotus hualan. But let's think that through a little bit better. Okay, a crooning bird with a bald head and sings dry, bubbling tones. I think Bingus Crosbius would have been much more appropriate, don't you? Want to see a totally cool performance of singers? Maybe you're one of the already million people who have clicked onto YouTube to watch a jazz choir from Europe do their version of a rainstorm using snaps for raindrops, and then hand claps for the downpour, and then stomping on the risers on which they were standing to simulate thunder. It's just beautiful. I'll put that on my blog here coming up when I get that on the website in just a few minutes. Maybe we'll even run it as a bumper at the bottom of the hour. I plan on having this snappy jazz choir on my iPod the next time I get a real storm over my house. And only because people have asked for pictures of my dog, Jack, who's totally freaked out every time there's a storm. From time to time, I'll put one on my blog. I'll do one of those coming up, too, a little bit later on. It was storming the other morning, and this big, fat fraidy cat climbed under my covers and wouldn't leave even when I left for work. Now, the only cool thing about the photo is, and I'll link it up here in a few minutes, is the blanket is the same chocolate brown color as my dog. He's a rather large Boston Terrier. So he almost disappears completely into the covers. Not exactly the Amelia Earhart mystery, but, It's kind of cool. And wouldn't it be nice if they finally were able to solve the Amelia Earhart story, right? 72 years ago, famed lucky lady Lindy aviator Amelia Earhart and navigator Fred Noonan disappeared while attempting to fly around the world. But the mystery remains unsolved. Nobody knows whatever happened to Earhart or her plane. Now, researchers at the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery, or TIGAR, say that they're on the verge of recovering DNA evidence that would demonstrate that Amelia Earhart had been stranded on an island formerly known as Gardner Island before finally perishing there. During May and June of next year, they will launch a new $500,000 expedition, continuing the archaeological work it's been doing on the island since 2001. Now, what they found was ladies' cosmetics. And they think that's just too odd for that island, for that space. And by the way, ladies' cosmetics of the particular vintage that would have made them Amelia Earhart's. Quote, we think we will be able to come back with DNA. That, according to Rick Gillespie, who's working with two DNA labs in Ontario, Canada, we were out there in 2007 under the impression that in order to extract DNA, we would need to find a piece of human, and we didn't find anything like that, but we did find what's best described as personal effects of the castaway that died there. Those being the cosmetics, I believe. Earlier this year, a woman directly related to Earhart, who wishes to remain anonymous, agreed to provide the group with a reference sample of my mitochondrial DNA. This type of DNA differs in many ways, primarily because it's passed down the female line. And so now here's the kicker for that. The female line of the Earhart family would almost have to have come from the family of Amelia Earhart's little sister, with whom she was very close. They were close because they moved around a lot due to financial instability of their family and their father's difficulty in keeping a job. At one point, their father, who was a railroad man, was working here in the town in which I live, St. Paul, Minnesota. He was working here for a period of just under 2 years. When he was, the Earhart sisters were in high school, and at high school, a public high school in St. Paul. Now, Amelia Earhart, according to the story, was not a particularly religious person, or at least not church-going in the sense, but her sister was. And her sister sang in the choir of St. Clement's Episcopal Church, which wouldn't have been far from where they were living. And that, as the story goes, on occasion, Amelia Earhart would mention later on in writing, that she would go with her sister and sing in the choir from time to time. And that happens to be the church that I have recently been assigned to as part of my diaconal duties. So I will be installed there coming up in September. But I just thought that was kind of a cool coincidence that I preach now, you know, every couple of weeks, every 3 or 4 weeks, I preach in the sanctuary of right in front of the place where Amelia Earhart would have been singing in the choir. The same pews are there. Nothing's changed. And I don't know, just kind of brings you around to the realization that sometimes mysteries are a lot closer than we realize, and that we probably run into the same spaces where people that we have been reading about in history books for years just used to hang out. And I bet you if we were able to go back with some sort of time-lapse photography and look at all the places that we, you know, sort of haunt in the daytime, we might find there's so many other people that were famous that have been there before us. It's just, you know, passing through that exact same space that we're passing through now. I just think it's cool. Anyway, our Gary Patterson tracks mysteries for Coast to Coast AM. And I don't know if you want to weigh in on the Amelia Earhart thing. I know it's a little outside your wheelhouse, but isn't it kind of cool to think that they might be able to finally solve it, Gary?
Oh, I think it'd be great to have a solution to this, yeah.
Of all of the rock and roll mysteries, and we'll get more into this coming up, and if you don't mind, I want to shoot the phone number out, too, because I know people always love to talk with you.
Great.
Of all the ones that are currently unsolved that you follow, which ones do you think might end up getting solved someday?
Oh, well, I mean, there's It's kind of hard because some of the great ones from the past, like Bobby Fuller's death in Hollywood, you know, I don't even know.
Of the Bobby Fuller Four of I Fought the Law and the Law Won?
Exactly. You know, when they found his body in his mother's car and he had been savagely beaten. I think one of his, I think his left index finger was broken. He was doused in gasoline and he had gasoline in his stomach and the police said that it was suicide, which you can't drink gasoline while you're alive. You know, you regurgitate it. So, but a lot of the files have basically been thrown away. And I know that a lot of this, you know, is more wishful thinking because basically a lot of these are just really just stories of just terrible coincidences or accidents. But, you know, just to have that edge on it makes it sound like a great mystery. So maybe Bobby Fuller might turn up someday. That would be an interesting solution to that one. I know his family's always looking for the answer.
I was surprised the other day. I was taking a trivia challenge online, and they in the trivia question they framed it almost as though it were a fact that Paul McCartney had died, and I thought, okay, this is it's a great mystery, it's a great story, but you know the Paul McCartney was dead story, you know that is one that's solved. There's still no lingering doubt about whether or not it's an imposter playing Paul, right?
Well, you know, Ian, what's really funny is that you have a group of believers and disbelievers. And even on the Paul is dead thing, I have friends who still think that he was replaced by a double. And it's really amazing. I know that, to me, the great mystery on Paul is dead is the Beatles actually put some of the clues there. And I really believe, and my little solution that I'll share with you is that when Sgt. Pepper's came out, it was such a revolutionary album. The Beatles were changing. They were evolving. You had Rubber Soul. You had Revolver. And when Sgt. Pepper's came out, it was maybe a risk because everything changed dramatically. So maybe the Beatles got together and just put a little insurance policy in here. If the album does really bad, we'll just hide some clues that Paul is dead. And nobody caught it. And the album sold well, so maybe they didn't have to pull it off. But the great gag is I'm convinced the Beatles at least put two clues into this, and especially the bass drum clue, which we can talk about later. But just the whole idea that it is probably one of the greatest mysteries in rock and roll history on why and how. I don't believe he was replaced by an imposter, but did you watch Paul on the Letterman show when he was on?
No.
Letterman was asking him, he said, you know, there was a rumor that you were killed or that you died. And he goes, oh, yeah, well, I walked across Abbey Road with my sandals. And then Letterman says, yeah, but you were supposed to be replaced by an imposter. And McCartney looked at him and said, well, this is him. And then Letterman looks at the camera and says, or is it?
Yeah, but and so recently I thought of you when we had on the guest who written the book that alleged that Jimi Hendrix had been murdered, that that Jimi Hendrix had been intentionally killed because he, like Michael Jackson, according to some, was worth more dead than alive. Where are you with that story?
Ian, I tell you, it's the main thing about this. This follows the great pattern in rock and roll. If you go back to Delphi Records and Bob Keane had three artists who all died, you know, terrible deaths. Sam Cooke, who was murdered in Hollywood in a hotel, and then you had Ritchie Valens, who was killed in a plane crash with Bobby Fuller, and you had, Buddy Holly, and then you had Bobby Fuller, who was the third. And he was actually investigated because dead rock stars do make a lot of money. And there was some evidence with Jimi Hendrix that he had wanted to change his management company and go back to Chaz Chandler. And what happened was when they, there was a story that Hendrix had been kidnapped and tied to a chair and blindfolded a few weeks before he died. And Hendrix was actually going through a very emotional time, maybe even a breakdown. And the story goes that he actually left a message for Chaz Chandler saying, I need help, bad man. And so, you know, the idea of murder, probably the story I remember is that I think you're talking about is where he was held down and wine was poured down his throat. to actually drown him in the wine with the pills and all that. I'm not too sure of that because, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. You can't really do any more investigation. The girl who was with him, Monica Daneman, committed suicide. Devon Wilson, his famous girlfriend, who he wrote Dolly Dagger for, took a swine dive off the Chelsea Hotel. She died. And now that you've got Mitch Mitchell dead and Noel Redding dead, I mean, you're not going to really find out. So, I mean, these are great stories.
Let me add, I'll add a little bit more to that that you might have missed, and I'll share that coming up with Gary Patterson. Also, you can link up to Gary and his books at coasttocoastam.com. What a great read. And I'll play you that clip, too, coming up. I don't know if you heard me mention it, Gary. It's the right here. This is the finger claps, the snaps of the choir from Europe. And I put this link up on my blog at coasttocoastam.com. Well, more with Gary Patterson. We'll give you the phone numbers. You join the conversation next, and we'll get to the Michael Jackson story, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Gary Patterson's written a bunch of books all about rock and roll mysteries. You can link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. Grab them from Amazon. It'd be totally worth it. Also, while you're online, go to coasttocoastam.com and just take a look around the stories and the photos. And I love that Rorschach story. That it, maybe it's just because I'm a Watchmen fan, but the they have demystified the classic inkblot test on Wikipedia. They've put the answers on Wikipedia of what the images are supposed to mean, what the best case scenario answers are for the famous, you know, psychological inkblot test. So you think that that would not be such a big deal, but it is. And apparently some psychologists are furious about it. You can find out more on the story at coasttocoastam.com. They're saying that they've ruined it. And I think, okay, well, the internet puts everything up. How can you expect to be able to keep that a mystery? You know, you can't put magic tricks out there without somebody doing a YouTube video explaining how the magic trick works. So why would this be any different? But go take a look online at coasttocoastam.com. More Gary Patterson. We'll get to at least a couple of callers coming up. I want to pick up the conversation we were having about Michael Jackson the other day. Gary and I were talking about things you could watch for that are almost as almost very dependable predictions coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So, Gary, just a few weeks ago, we had on a guest on Coast to Coast AM who had been kind of the roadie slash personal assistant to Chaz Chandler, who worked out not only with the Animals, but then also when Chaz Chandler went off on his own as a manager for people like Jimi Hendrix. He was there as a personal witness. And he wrote in his book that Chaz Chandler sold the contract of Jimi Hendrix for nothing because he had been letting Hendrix crash at his pad whenever he was in town. And Chaz Chandler had returned to his place after remembering that he had left something at home and walked in the door and found Jimi Hendrix in bed with his wife. And he said he was furious, absolutely furious. Came to the office, trashed the office, smashed every Jimi Hendrix piece of memorabilia that he had collected, posters, albums, whatever, smashed it all, and then turned around and sold the contract for next to nothing just because he didn't want anything to do with him anymore and divorced his wife. So when you said that there was a rock and roll rumor, I remember talking about this with you once, that Jimi Hendrix was trying to get back to Chaz Chandler. Or at least somebody once told me about this, that apparently that's just not true, that Chaz Chandler wouldn't have anything to do with him. But then it goes on to say that the guy who we had on Coast to Coast, who spoke with the highest of authority, said he actually had the manager that Hendrix was working with confessed to him that he killed him. He said, yeah. we were drunk, and he said, I did it.
Well, that was Mike Jeffrey, and there was some crime linkings in with this, too. There's even a story that when Jimmy was busted with heroin going into Canada, that Mike Jeffrey had planted the heroin so that Hendrix would know that he would never be safe. He could never leave him. And that's why Hendricks wanted desperately out, and that's why he was probably hoping against hope that he could get back with Chas Chandler. But the thing with Michael Jeffrey, it's a real strange thing. What happened was he was killed in a plane crash. So, you know, all the principals are dead. And, you know, the stories are great, but, I mean, it's going to be hard to reopen anything 40 years right. old and get anything out of it when everybody who was there. I know that Monica Daneman, Hendricks' girlfriend, instead of calling an ambulance when she found him, she calls Eric Burden from right. the animals. And he says, right. call an ambulance.
Right.
And, you know, so, I mean, yeah. it's such a great story. And, I mean, this is what creates the great urban legends of all time. And, I
yep.
mean, I'm sure it has a lot of credence to it. It's an interesting story.
Well, interesting that it came out at the time the Michael Jackson story did, that somehow some people saw Jimi Hendrix is worth more dead than alive, especially because he was being so uncooperative and he was about to head off on a concert tour, a list of concert dates he didn't want to do. Which then also brings us back to the Elvis story, that Elvis was heading off to do some concert dates that he was too exhausted to do. And now we know more about Michael Jackson. He weighed 110 pounds. He was in terrible physical shape. He was barely able to make it through these events. Last time we talked, you said you just wait 48 hours and you'll see that the stories will start to pop up that Michael Jackson had been murdered. At the time that you and I were talking, nobody had said that. But since then, it became kind of all the rage with Joe Jackson, his father, and others. You've looked into it. And, I mean, is there any truth to this? It just was something to say to get on the news? Or was there anything that had the ring of truth of it to you?
I think that basically it's one of the parts of grief and coming to grips with it. You know, when I think about murder, if the doctor had given him an overdose and it was accidental, then I don't. And I mean, not that he was a part of some secret conspiracy to kill Michael Jackson. If you're going to do the conspiracy bit, you'd have to say that there were a group of insiders who had addicted him to drugs, and that the overdose would then be something that would be reasonable. And if it's an overdose, then basically you're looking at manslaughter, maybe. And so, I mean, that's the one thing. But the idea that you have this secret force of people who wanted to benefit financially from Michael Jackson's death, then you would probably say that he was unable to do the shows. I'd heard that he thought he was doing 10 shows in London and not 50. And
right.
there was no way that he could get through 50 shows. Well, if you're insuring the shows with the artist, if the artist died, then it would bring in a great amount of money. And the second thing you'd have to look at would be the catalog of Michael Jackson, all the songs. I know that he and Sony split the Beatle catalog, but you had Michael Jackson's own personal recordings. I'm not sure how much he owned at the end because of his indebtedness, but,
right.
but still it was a fabulous thing there. Plus, you know, I read that there were 100 recordings already made that he would have left his children to support them. So, you know, the basic thing is that when we talk about this, Ian, there was even a report early after Elvis's death that it could have been murder. I think one of his doctors said Elvis was killed by a karate chop, which is totally crazy. And then when McCartney and the Great Paul is Dead thing, it was a CIA conspiracy to rid the world of Beatle influences when they turned
right.
political.
Right,
and then
right.
Jim Morrison in Paris was killed by secret services. Or if you take a look at the counterculture, you know, it's very odd that in 1970 that Jimi Hendrix died. And when Janis Joplin heard about Hendrix's death, she said, well, I'm sure glad I didn't die today because he would have got all the press. Well, she died 2 weeks later. And
right.
when Morrison was on trial in Miami, when he heard about Jimmy and Janice's death, he says, well, you know, you're drinking with number three. And he was dead. So you had three of the major leaders of the counterculture dead within months. So, you know, the conspiracy idea normally hits, and you can always make a great case for it. And I think that's what we're going with Michael Jackson right now, the conspiracy angle.
And we'll follow it to see whether there's anything
sure.
that should come up from it. But obviously, this, unlike perhaps when other celebrities have died, this story is getting vetted by the minute. I mean, there are so many more news sources investigating the Michael Jackson story than, say, when Jimi Hendrix died or Jim Morrison died.
But think, Ian, it's the Internet, okay? Right. Imagine what would have happened if the internet had been around when the Paula's Dead rumors hit or Hendrix's death. I mean, it would have been the same thing.
Right.
And today, you know, I mean, and everything you read on the internet, you know, you can trust, correct?
Only if you write it.
Now, oh, I appreciate that, Ian.
But, okay, so what do you, if you're going to make a prediction and then we'll take some phone calls, what would you anticipate we should start to hear? Following, if the past is prologue, what are some of the other things that are yet to come about in the saga, in the post-death saga of Michael Jackson?
Okay, the conspiracy theory thing is going to go for a while because it may last for years, and there's going to be a tie-in with a doctor. It may be manslaughter. It could be something. There, you know, the basic way to find out the answer is follow the money. Find out where the money goes. And right now, it seems like it's pretty well secure with his mother, Catherine, along with Neverland. That's number one. Number two, you're going to hear the usually it takes about a week after someone dies that someone sees him. You have the mysterious appearance, the resurrection from the dead. Michael Jackson's not dead. He faked his death. And from what I understand, Ian, I think there's even a couple of photos out on the internet now that were supposedly taken after his death. So that's already starting, which I think is kind of interesting, because if you follow the pattern, you remember Elvis was sighted in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and that created a wave of Elvis sightings across the country.
Right.
Jim Morrison was sighted getting on a plane leaving Paris 4 days after his death. So, you know, it just follows the pattern, so you'll see that too. And those are going to be the things. Now, how long this lasts, who knows?
All they has to do, it would seem, for Michael Jackson to be able to fade in, if he were alive, really, would be to take off the wig. To take off the hair, because that becomes such a signature piece, and it would seem like he could change his appearance pretty easily just by going back to a darker complexion, and people just wouldn't recognize him. The two things that he's known for, that sort of that Elvis like chin that that he had implanted. Interesting story too about the guy who they're now saying is Michael Jackson's original son, Omer Bodie, this Norwegian kid. And Joe Jackson earlier in the week said, yep, he was one of Michael Jackson's kids, and he's become totally accepted into the Jackson family clan after Jackson's death, which I thought it was one of those National Enquirer rumors that he'd had a love child.
Right.
But now Joe Jackson saying, no, that's one of the kids. All right. So let's get to a couple of phone calls. Doesn't have to be about anything that we've mentioned so far. Jesse, who's first up and hanging on the longest on Coast to Coast? Let's get Curtis in Florida on Coast to Coast for Rock and Roll Mysteries expert Gary Patterson. Curtis?
Man, this is all fitting together. My first concert was Jimi Hendrix in Tampa.
All right.
Watched him burn the guitar. And Jim Morrison, you know, was from Clearwater and used to come to Clearwater Beach to visit his girlfriend. I was there the night he got arrested. Anyway, my creative writing teacher in Largo High School was Miss Reed, and we heard somebody, one of the other teachers, call her Liz, and she was a really gorgeous girl. We asked her if she was Elizabeth Reed, and she said she didn't want to talk about it. And that's what I'm asking you is, was there really an Elizabeth Reed, or was it just a gravestone in the graveyard where they're buried?
Well, actually, there was an Elizabeth Reed, and she's buried at Rose Hill Cemetery. And
you have to explain that story a little bit more for people that don't know.
Okay. In Rose Hill Cementary in Macon, Georgia, the Allman Brothers, it's a beautiful place. And you could go in, I mean, it almost looks like a natural amphitheater. And the story goes that guitarist Dickie Betts heard this rhythm in his head of the song when he was with another young lady. Now, this is what Dwayne Allman says. And Ian, we better make sure we get this one right.
Yeah, or Dickie Betts will call under another name like he did last time.
Forrest. Yeah,
right.
But what happens is that Dwayne Allman had told the story, and obviously it may not have been true, but it might have been a dig at Dickie. But anyway, supposedly Dickie was with this young lady in the cemetery, and he was with her, and all at once the song started going through his head, and he looked at the tombstone on the grave in which they were sitting or lying, and the name was Elizabeth Reed. So, in memory of Elizabeth Reed was supposed to be that song. And, of course, if you go to Rose Hill, they also have a statue of Little Martha. And I guess one of the strange things, well, we can stop here real quickly, and is that, you know, Michael Jackson, I don't think he's been buried yet. So, he's somewhere out in a secret location in Hollywood. But, you know, if I would remember that when James Brown died, his body wasn't buried for 10 days, and Anna Nicole Smith was 30 days, but when Dwayne Allman died, his body wasn't buried for a year.
They
kept
Why?
Him in, yeah, they kept him in storage because of some legal issues, and I think it had to do with his estate, with a either an ex-wife or someone who had some issues with this. And what's really odd, and I've been trying to get to the bottom of the story, but what's really odd is that when Barry Oakley was killed, 1 year and 13 days later of Dwayne Allman's motorcycle accident three blocks away, Dwayne Allman and Barry Oakley were buried together at Rose Hill Cemetery. So, you know, when we talk about Michael Jackson being unburied, that's probably not too unheard of in the field of rock and roll.
I've heard that actually that he's temporarily interred under a fake name somewhere.
Well, I've heard that too, temporarily, until
right.
they decide where they want to put him. If he's going
right.
to be buried at Forest Lawn or Neverland, or if he's
right.
going to make it back to Gary, Indiana, who knows?
Right, right. And then, Jesse, I think we have time for at least one more on Coast to Dave in Boston for rock and roll mysteries expert Gary Patterson. Link up to him and his books at coasttocoastam.com. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, Ian. Hi, Gary.
Hey, how are you?
Good. My question is about Felix Pappalardi. He was a musician with the rock group Mountain, and
mm-hmm.
I believe he also produced some of Cream's first albums.
He did.
Anyways, he was murdered, I think, by a woman around 1980-ish, and I don't know if it was his wife or girlfriend, but I don't know whatever happened. I heard
okay.
that maybe she got away with murder. That's what I thought the final
right.
thing was. And I was
Gary,
wondering,
what do you know about that?
Well, you know, it's really odd. Felix Pappalardi was shot and killed by his wife. And I was out in L.A. last year shooting some video things. And one of the guys that I was talking to was one of the roadies from Mountain and was Leslie West, his roommate. And Felix used to have this warehouse they practiced in. Matter of fact, this is going to be a shock for all the guitar fans, but this guy told me that Felix Pappalardi taught Leslie West the solo to Mississippi Queen note for note, and they would practice in this warehouse. And he said that he was there, and he said that, you know, it was a terrible accident, that it wasn't murder. So this is what he told me. So who knows? But, I mean, I do know that he was killed, and I don't think that she went to prison. So that could be an accidental case of homicide there.
Well, there's certainly been a few of those, you know. I mean, it,
mm-hmm.
and again, higher than the national average, right? I mean, then if you took the average population group, if you're a rock and roll performer, you stand a much greater chance of dying from something stupid, whether it's drug related or, you know, gun related. I mean, or both. You know, the people who are high and they've got guns on.
Or flying in small planes in bad weather,
right.
or playing
right.
electric guitars in a bathtub, yeah.
Right, right, right. All right, one last one for Gary Patterson. I'm sorry, what was that one? Tom? Tom in Dallas on Coast to Coast AM. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, Gary, you tell a great story. You and I have corresponded many times email-wise over the years.
All right, Tom, glad to talk to you.
Glad and nice, so nice to meet you, man. I wondered if you got that email I sent regarding John Lennon in the first the Beatles' first U.S. visit, 60 minutes into the DVD exactly, he starts playing a mouth organ, a melodica, and it's the opening riff to Strawberry Fields, which was years before it was written.
I did get the email. I thought it was very interesting. And sometimes with my email, it takes a while for me to get
yeah.
back with it. But I do remember reading that. And, you know, maybe it's somewhere in the collective unconscious that all these great melodies dwell.
Right.
And they just come out when you need it. And maybe that was the part that he had played, and it came back in the creation of Strawberry Fields. But it's a fabulous
right.
opening.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So he's playing the harmonica piece during an interview. How many years before Strawberry Fields?
February of 1964.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, that's really cool. And what's even cooler about that is just what you're saying there, Gary, that he may not have been aware of that.
Yeah. Just a beautiful melody in his head that he's playing, and all once it comes back, because when you create it, you know, it's like you're just storing it. And then when you need the part, it comes to you, and you may have created it years before.
Right. All right, so we'll be watching for the Michael Jackson burial story, and we'll continue to track any of the allegations about Michael Jackson either surviving, and we'll look for those photos, Or the stories of Michael Jackson having been murdered. And we will follow the money, and don't be surprised if you get a call from us at some point in the future, okay?
Ian, it's always great to be with you, my friend.
Okay. Thanks for giving us some extra time. I know George was very nice to lend you to me for tonight, Gary Patterson on Coast to Coast AM. Link up to him through our webpage. And then coming up, a guy who, as I was told earlier, is fearing for his life for what he's been writing about Goldman Sachs, for what he knows about where the bodies are buried on Wall Street in our economy, and why it just makes more sense for him to not be in this country, because he says we're headed for a major economic collapse again. And he'll talk about that, despite the signs that things are getting better. Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett.